From the land of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby. He's at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, that's their ethanol plant, will join us to take a look at the cash grain situation and talk about biofuels. And along the way today, we'll get an update of all the agricultural news, including a brand new Chicago Tribune series that started today on the Illinois pork industry. That all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for Wednesday. September contract in the corn pit, three quarters higher at $3.25. December, $3.35, up a penny. August soybeans, 5 1/4 higher. November, up 2 1/2 at $9.55 1/2. Bean oil, 24 cents higher. Bean meal, up $2.10. Soft red winter wheat futures up 9 cents in the nearby September. The July of next year, up 6 1/4. It settled at $4.82 1/2. The hard red July at $4.75 1/2, up 5 3/4. Live cattle futures, 47 1/2 cents higher at $116.70. Feeders at $2 higher, $147.47 1/2. And lean hogs down 42 1/2 cents at $68.50. Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, now joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for being with us, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Todd. Good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you here. Tell me about the marketplace from your perspective there as a farmer, and what crops look like and what you've had to really think about as we head towards the harvest of what I think is probably a good crop for you.
Yeah, it's been quite a change from last year in this part of Indiana. We've had some pretty good rains. Our crop looks really pretty good. Moving forward, though, one thing I think that maybe affected the market a bit here, there was supposed to be some pretty good significant rains from Illinois into Indiana. That really hasn't developed like they thought it would. There's a chance again on Friday. But going forward, when you look around Indiana, the northeastern part of Indiana is really struggling. As you move into Ohio, farmers over there are struggling. So I guess it's just depending upon which location you are, Todd, but in our part of the world, we're fortunate enough to have a pretty good crop so far.
Yeah, most people do have a pretty good crop. There are some places that have struggled. Most of those are in the eastern Corn Belt. I'm wondering how you deal with such low prices at this point. Now you know you've got a crop in the field. You may or may not have some of that crop already marketed. But looking at a very low price, probably below production cost, what do you do?
Well, I think one thing to look at is basis. We've been having a very strong basis for the last several years in the Eastern Corn Belt, but with a large crop coming, I think we need to be concerned as producers of trying to make sure we can find a home for that crop. And we expect at harvest for the basis to get pretty wide. So if you're a producer and you don't have enough room for your crop, we're kind of looking at trying to lock in a basis and use a basis contract, anticipating going forward. One thing, it's market's focused on yield right now, Todd, but we've had some unbelievable demand. We do believe demand is the key, and over time we believe these markets will work themselves up out of this low. So we want to maintain our ownership somehow in this crop if you let it go.
Are you thinking about locking basis in on corn on just those bushels you have to take to town and sell across the scale, or that you're putting in commercial storage, or something else?
I think there's still some opportunities, even if you're going to put it in storage or have grain stored at home, to look at some basis that are still fairly attractive. Eastern Corn Belt still is short on corn, but with this new crop coming, there will be bushels around. So not only corn that's got to go out of the field, but certainly maybe if you can get a favorable basis for next spring or winter, taking advantage of some of that too as we look for a bigger crop in this part of the country.
Is the carry in the market telling you to go ahead and store your corn?
Yeah, I think so. Again, we believe the market behavior will mimic last year. We're kind of the only game in town as far as corn that's available to the world. We've become really cheap trying to replace those bushels out of South America, both in corn and beans, as far as our export capacity going forward. And the other component that's out there is starting to look like it's going to be a good crop, but I think some of those giant numbers that have been pushed around by the trade, a lot are looking at some fields and seeing some tip back, maybe not some complete pollination. And I think the fringe areas, I was out in South Dakota and out in that part of the world, Nebraska, they've kind of struggled out there too. Their weather hasn't been ideal. You got a lot of heat in Texas, Oklahoma, and up through the Dakotas. So I think the fringe areas are the key to this crop, Todd. I mean, we've got a lot of acres. There's a really good crop in the core of the country, but a lot of fringe areas are not going to be so good.
So in the corn market, the futures are doing what they usually would do, meaning the September and December are lower than the March, May, or higher rather. I'm sorry, lower than the March, May, and July, meaning maybe there's a reason to store. However, in the soybeans, it's flipped or inverted. The August contract, November contract are actually higher than those that are deferred. Not by a lot, but the bean market apparently would like some beans delivered, and that it's telling futures, or rather farmers, that that should be okay. What do you think?
I think the front-end beans, and I think the short supply of beans that are going to be available to processors as we start this early harvest, I can see a very good basis if the futures don't react and come back sharply here. And when you look at the bean crop, it's a pretty good-looking crop, but it's a very green crop. I don't think we're going to see a lot of really harvested early beans. So if we can get a good push on basis early in beans and we don't see the futures jump up, Todd, we want to take advantage of that. I think selling the beans to the market and then waiting and seeing or some kind of re-ownership strategy if you let them go out of the field if you don't have anything to store them, I think that's a play to look at because it is a very tight bean scenario. And moving forward, we're going to be the name of the game in town as far as exports until we see what that new South American crop's going to do.
Just a few days away now, the 12th day of August, USDA will release its crop production numbers, the first one really for the year. What do you think it'll show, and has RMC developed its own set of numbers?
We're looking at a crop in the 170 or 171 based simply because the ratings are so high. We think eventually that may be the high water mark. It's interesting when you look at the crop ratings, though. The state of Colorado went up 4% Monday. Well, is that one of the bigger producing states? No. You look at South Dakota, they went down. Ohio went down. Those are a lot bigger areas, a lot bigger corn acres. But simply put, at this time, with the ratings so high, it's hard to imagine USDA is not going to work that yield higher. Again, that's our view of it. I don't know in the end it'll quite be that big, but certainly that kind of a number, the market's trying to factor that in right now.
Hey, Chuck, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities. In today's agricultural news, on its face, the USDA's announcement Monday that it had reached a deal with Brazil to reopen markets there to U.S. beef seemed like good news for the U.S. meat industry. But the flip side, the U.S. will start taking imports of Brazilian beef, drew swift and severe criticism from the cattle industries, whose leaders say they're worried the new arrangement could allow foot and mouth disease, previously documented in Brazil last decade, to spread to U.S. shores. The big three beef groups, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, U.S. Cattlemen's Association, and RCAF USA, all condemned the move, noting that foot and mouth disease gaining access to the United States could be a nightmare scenario for domestic meat producers as exports are closed down if the disease arrives in the U.S. Let's stay with the United States meat industry. McDonald's announced it will only be sourcing chickens raised without antibiotics that are important to humans. President Mike Andres said, "Our customers want food they feel great about eating, all the way from the farm to the restaurant table, and these moves are a way to help that happen. McDonald's has been working with its farmers for years to limit the number of antibiotics they use in their chain's poultry supply. All chicken served in McDonald's American restaurants comes from farms working closely with the chain to implement the new policy. The chain does approve of using antibiotics to treat chickens when they become ill, but doesn't support the practice after they are well. In a separate move, McDonald's announced they would serve jugs of low-fat white milk and fat-free chocolate milk only from cows not treated with RBST. That's an artificial growth hormone sometimes used in cattle. From meat, we go to plants, where a recent Environmental Protection Agency draft report on atrazine, a herbicide, doesn't take into account a large amount of scientific evidence that reaffirms the product is safe. The National Corn Growers Association's Production and Stewardship Action Team says that sets a dangerous precedent. The team says federal law requires EPA to make its decisions based on science. And the science is pretty clear. Atrazine is one of the safest and most effective crop management tools farmers have in their toolboxes, say the National Corn Growers Association. It's also one of the most studied products in history with 50 years of data available. EPA released its draft assessment in June. All pesticides must be registered with EPA and be re-registered every 15 years. And finally today, President Obama is launching his final push for congressional passage of the TPP. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. One U.S. senator says the move could get a wink and a nod from Obama's hoped-for successor.
Well, right now I'm president, and I'm for it. And you know, people said we weren't going to be able to get the trade authority to even present this before Congress, and somehow we muddled through and got it done, and I intend to do the same with respect to the actual agreement.
While Hillary Clinton and congressional supporters will continue to campaign against it, former Senate Trade Chair and Republican Chuck Grassley says Clinton may quietly signal her support for early TPP action, which Midwest farmers strongly back, despite the long odds.
I'm saying she could wink at him. I don't know that she would, and she wouldn't want anybody to know that she's winking at him. Or he could ignore her and go ahead, but if she's going to be sworn in on January the 20th, I think you're going to find a lot of Democrats in Congress are going to honor her and not want to do it unless she winks at them too.
Grassley says the votes to pass TPP might be there in the Senate during a lame duck session, but right now they aren't there in the House. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Today, the Chicago Tribune began to publish a series of articles on the pork industry in the state of Illinois. There are a set of articles that the Illinois Pork Producers Association cooperated with reporters on. However, Jennifer Tyree, who's the executive director of the IPPA, is here, and the organization, the association, isn't exactly satisfied that their side of this particular issue was covered in a balanced way. Jennifer, tell me why it is that IPPA is concerned about the articles the Trib is running.
Well, thank you, Todd. One of the main concerns that our association has with the articles is that essentially we had producers and industry stakeholders over the last multiple months reach out to these writers and share their stories, invite them on their farms, let them tour their barns, and really gave them so much access so that they could talk and ask questions and get a balance to the pork industry. And the final story, we do not feel as an association that there was a lot of showing of these discussions by our producers and industry stakeholders.
How important is the pork industry in the state of Illinois?
Well, Illinois is ranked the fourth in the nation for pork production. We contribute over $1.8 billion to the state economy and more than $170 million in taxes and over 10,000 jobs. And it's not all about the money, though, is what I want to say to you today, Todd, is that the dedication and the passion that our producers, these family farmers, have, that part was not mentioned in the Tribune stories. That was missing, and that is one of the reasons that our association is very disappointed in the final outcome.
One of the first stories deals with the Livestock Management Facilities Act, or the LMFA, which sets forth a set of criteria for which all kinds of livestock facilities, over 1,000 animal units, might be sited on a property in the state of Illinois. Do you know of your association members, how many would be above that LMFA Act 1,000 animal unit level?
I do not at this time. I can say that it's not a total percentage. We have a mixture of all different sizes of producers that we represent, from even one of my board members that has a small amount under 20 to our larger producer. And so our association represents all sizes and types of producers in the state of Illinois.
Your president put forth an open letter to the association members today. Why was that done?
That was essentially so that we were able to let our membership and producers in Illinois know that the Illinois pork producers did attempt to work with these riders, because a lot of those producers that did speak with these riders are looking at this article today and feeling the disappointment of not seeing their words relayed, or the experts in the field, that their comments are not relayed in the stories. And our president, Bob Fraze, felt it was very important to let our membership know what was happening with this situation.
Jennifer, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. We do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Jennifer Tyree is the executive director of the Illinois Pork Producers Association. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. That's their ethanol production plant. Good afternoon to you. Who do we have the pleasure of talking to today?
You got Pete today.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Peterson. How are you?
Great.
Well, tell me about basis in the area.
Basis in the area, we've recently had a pretty good influx of old crop corn. I think with the pending new crop bushels and need to find a home for them, a lot of it's starting to move. We actually have backed off our base a little bit. We're only at 5 over right now. Some of the surrounding processors are a little bit higher than that. But grain movement has started to pick up, and like I said, the inevitable new crop is bearing down on us.
It is bearing down on you. How long do you think that you'll be able to hold at overs there at the ethanol plant?
You know, it's going to be interesting. I would say it maybe through mid-month. It's all indicative of how grain moves, but I think right now we're fast approaching the zero basis.
You were, of course, in a short crop area last year, had to have a basis level that provided enough incentive to move grain from further away into your part of the world. What do you expect basis will look like by the time we get to January, suppose, of this year, next coming year, that is?
I think January, you know, there'll be some potential there. Once the grain goes in the bins and the doors get slammed shut, I think in general the producer is probably going to hold on and maybe give this market a little chance to bounce. So I guess basis will have to do its fair share of the work to get the bins open back up again. And, you know, the basis in fall may get real sloppy, so maybe that Jan-Feb will look a little bit more appealing.
And what are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Right now, into Delphi, we're at 2 over at 326. Climbers, we're at 5 over at 329. And beans in Adelphi, we're at 9 over the November at 962.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet.
That is Pete Peterson. He is with the Andersons right there in Logansport, Indiana, at their Climbers facility. They produce ethanol. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks so much. Weather's been way better than anybody thought it might be for the summer as it relates to crops. What do you see coming up this week?
Really, it's status quo. I don't think we're going to be worrying about much of anything except for some areas in the eastern Midwest, Ohio, parts of Indiana and Michigan still dealing with some shortages of moisture. Crop stresses are increasing there. We did get a little rain over this past weekend, but it wasn't enough, and it looks like we're going to be relatively dry in those areas for a good part of the coming week. So continued concern in those areas, a little bit of concern still in South Dakota, and we've got some relief that's going on in the Delta this week. We've seen substantial amounts of rain in that lower Mississippi River Basin area. It's raining now in parts of the southeastern states where it had been also quite dry. It's just amazing when I step back and look at the big picture here, relative to where we usually are in the first days of August, this has been a phenomenal year. With the moisture that's in the soil right now compared to what it usually is, we should be able to cruise right on through the middle of this month without a hitch if the rain stopped today and didn't occur again for 10 days. That's pretty rare. But in general, the forecast here continues to point towards status quo. Yes, we will have some problems with ongoing dryness pockets, and we'll have some areas that will get plenty of rain. In fact, some hail may come around with some of these thunderstorms. But the bottom line is the production outlook is still pretty darn good.
You think we will get rainfall in the next 2 weeks, though?
I do think that everybody will get rain at one time or another. Some of it will be quite a bit lighter than other areas, and the temperatures are not going to be oppressively hot. So we should be able to stand on August 15th and still say we have good subsoil moisture around. And looking out 2 weeks from that point should be able to tell us a whole lot about how we're going to finish out that bean crop.
Now let's get your assessment of fall harvested crops in other parts of the world, China, Ukraine, Russia, India.
You know, I think there's actually a bigger problem right now in parts of Europe and Ukraine than there is in the United States. And these aren't even big areas. France hasn't had much rain recently. They're firming up. It hasn't been hot in France, so the situation is not critical, and it is going to rain there tomorrow, so that'll be somewhat helpful there. But eastern Romania, eastern Bulgaria, into the heart of Ukraine, and neighboring areas of southern Russia are dry. The top and subsoil moisture are certainly way below average for this time of the year. There is crop stress occurring there. The crops, summer crops are filling. The outlook is for continued stressful conditions there for a bit. So there will be somewhat of a decline in production in that part of the world. But China, outside of the flood damage that occurred earlier this summer, their crops that are surviving are in very good shape. They did lose quite a bit of acreage, though, because of the floods that occurred in early July. So we're waiting to see what that impact might be. India looks fairly good, though, and Australia is poised to have a very big winter crop.
Okay, thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
All right, you have yourself a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.